Hi, everyone, and welcome to the First Principles of Medicine podcast, where we break down complex medical topics into their first principles. So today we'll be breaking down the very, very complex topic, distal radial fractures, which I know we might need a long one for this one, but to help me break it down, I've got some esteemed guests with me, JT, Jason, and Amali.
Amali. Hey. You want to introduce yourself, Amali?
What do you want to know?
I don't know.
Okay. All right. Let me know if I'm talking too fast.
I'm just impressed because on your first time presenting, you presented better.
Let him cook. Let him cook. All right. Let him cook. I may or may or not be saying that throughout that. Okay. So today we'll be talking about the first principles of distal radial fractures. And I feel like we've all got a good fundamental understanding of them, considering we've done orthopedics last year.
That's debatable,
and
sure.
For 2 weeks, yeah, sure. Especially if you did RCS, right? But I've broken it down into three principles, and these are: always do a neurovascular assessment, don't get tunnel vision about the fracture, and your management is simply non-operative or operative, okay?
Fancy words, I love it.
Try and remember those as we go through the talk today, because they basically form the structure of how we'll be doing it. So I want to start with neurovascular assessment because I just want to gauge about, you know, what we already sort of understand. So shout out anything you know about neurovascular assessment. What does it entail? What does it involve?
Pulses.
Yeah, perfect.
Nerves.
Yeah, even better. Great, done. we'll come back to this.
You broke down what neurovascular means.
Nailed it.
Exam, like, would you just...
Yeah.
What? So you test like C6, C7,
yeah,
C8.
Yeah, so upper limb neuro, you're not really worrying about like whether they have a triceps reflex or a brachioradialis. You want it to be targeted. So what do you think would be a targeted upper limb neuro?
Oh, like sensations sort of in the, different.
What nervous
distributions? Median nerve?
Sorry.
The lateral 3.5 is median nerve.
Mm-hmm.
And then
yes.
The 1.5. Have you heard of it?
Oh, yeah.
And then radius. So the radial nerve is all the dorsal aspect of the hand.
Yeah. And then the remaining 1.5 is the ulnar nerve.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You want to test their motor function as well. And that's where you're looking at their ulnar, median, and radial nerve. Do you know some three quick tests you can use to test it?
Oh, it's like thumbs up.
Yeah.
They do the okay sign.
Okay sign. Yeah.
And.
Yes. Oh, perfect.
Finger abduction.
Yeah. So that's ulnar.
So abduction is ulnar.
Yeah.
Because it controls the...
It's a finger abduction ulnar.
Yeah. What do you think the thumbs up one is?
Radial.
Okay, yeah. And or you can do like a stop sign
extension.
For radial.
Yeah.
Because that's and then median is
median
your...
Median is the okay sign.
Yes. Great. Awesome.
Yeah, sweet.
And so by doing a quick test for the motor and sensation, you've done your neuro exam.
Yeah, and then for the vascular part, you just assess the radial pulse.
I'd also assess the brachial pulse as well.
And do you assess like the cap refill time?
Yes, you would as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the neurovascular assessment. So you can ask them some things. It's the 5 P's of compartment syndrome.
Isn't it 6 P's?
6 P's? Is it 6? Mm-hmm. Oh, damn. I've been showing up here. So what are the 5 6 P's? Of compartment syndrome.
5 6 P's? Or six?
Well, I thought it was 5. I thought it was 5, but I didn't. Now it's 6. Bruh, what's the 6th one then?
Okay, let's
go through.
Do your 5 and I'll try. Let's see if I remember.
Okay, Amali,
the 6th one.
you can begin.
Pallor.
Yep.
Excessive pain on passive movement.
Mm-hmm.
It's just pain.
Just pain, yeah, but you're right.
I thought it was on passive movement.
It's just pain. Pallor. Yeah, a bit of.
Oh, no.
We're doing the 6 5 P's.
Oh, this is like peripheral vascular. I thought you were talking about like compartment syndrome specific.
It's similar.
It's similar.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Pain.
Yeah. But you're right. It's excessive pain. You're right. It's excessive pain.
Yeah.
That's the primary finding on history and examination.
Pallor, pain, paralysis.
Yep.
Keep going.
Pulseless.
Yep.
Perishingly cold.
I don't know where you'd get that.
It's poikilothermia, I think. That's
Oh, okay. Yep.
And paresthesia, so 6.
That is 6.
Wow, there you go.
Which one did you miss?
Pulselessness. We've already said that, right?
Yeah.
Which one's not on your list?
Perishingly cold. I don't know about that one.
Poikilothermia.
Oh, sorry. Terminology. Yeah.
Yeah, so the biggest one is you do your neurovascular assessment to rule out compartment syndrome because that is a medical emergency. and you're going to call ortho to come down and do a emergency fasciotomy.
Yeah. So you're saying that the key signs of compartment syndrome are those six Ps?
Well, five Ps.
Okay.
Because, I mean, limb ischemia is also those five, six Ps, but you can think about it, compartment syndrome's very similar, where you've had a sudden pressure inside their sort of compartment is so great that they're going to get significant pain.
Mm.
You're not going to be able to feel any pulses.
Yeah.
They might have paralysis because it's impeding on the medium nerve, might get weakness and paresthesia, so pins and needles.
Oh, and the classic OSCE stim is when they say the patient's in a cast.
Yes. Yeah.
They're probably made by
absolutely
medical student.
Yeah. Made by medical student.
And it's
just like, open up and their whole arm's just white. Yeah. Yep. Great. Awesome. All right. So definitions. So a distal radius fracture is defined as a fracture that occurs in the distal radius. As you might, it's shocking, isn't it?
It really is.
But
I was talking to a friend the other day.
Yeah.
And we said that she broke her collarbone. Is that?
What's a distal radius fracture.
You're breaking a bone. Is that actually the right way to say it? Is that the layman's word of saying fracture?
Fracture. Break, right?
Yeah.
But it just sounds wrong.
You fractured your collarbone. I don't know.
I think fracture is just
Is fracture a layman's word as well?
I do think that the general public seem to think that a fracture is less severe than a break.
Yes, I agree. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's a good point. Jinx. No.
Whereas a break is like a complete fracture.
Yeah.
Like you actually just like broke the stick in half.
Yeah, displacement and okay. Massively angulated.
Think of like a partial fracture as like a crack or something. I don't know. Mm.
That's a fracture, right?
Mm. Yeah, it's still technically.
But you don't break your collarbone, right? Usually you...
Oh, God.
Yeah, you can definitely break a collarbone.
Aiden right now.
Everyone that's broken a collarbone, listen to this, is just like, what do you mean you can't break a collarbone?
No. You don't break your collarbone in half.
Oh, you can do that.
You can certainly do that.
You haven't played footy.
What about after we finish talking, we can try it and see if we can do it.
Collarbone.
So a distal radius fracture, basically it involves the metaphysis of the distal radius. So do you guys recall what metaphysis, diaphysis, epiphysis is? Maybe we'll go around.
That's very
Greek. Yeah, man, that's...
So JT. Epi is like the on top, outer.
Yes, great.
The most and distal end. Physis is physics. No, I don't know.
Just means above the growth plate, pretty much.
Mm.
And then metaphysis means like just below the neck, and then diaphysis is the sort of stick of the long bone, okay? All it is that it's involvement of the metaphysis of the distal radius with or without articular involvement, meaning the fracture can be in or outside of the joint space. And the reason why I thought this would be a good topic for discussion is that it's the most common fracture in adults, accounting up to 1 in 4, so 25% of all fractures that come into the hospital. And there's a very classic bimodal distribution. Does anyone have a guess of what sort of distribution we see in the population?
Old and young.
Yes, perfect.
Like every bimodal distribution.
Yep. So young people tend to be high energy mechanisms, whilst elderly it's more in the fush, so fall on outstretched hand. And your risk factors for this fracture are therefore osteoporosis pretty much, and anything that can put you at risk of osteoporosis. Cool. Clinical features. How do you think your patient with a distal radius fracture is going to present?
Pain.
Oh, come on. Pain where?
Tenderness.
Well, no, but where? He's not going to get tenderness in his epigastric region.
In the metaphysis of the radius.
Yeah. He's just like pointing to it. Yeah, you're not going to get pain in your like epigastrium, or you're not going to get chest pain. Mm. They're going to come in typically following an episode of trauma, whether that be a young person or an elderly person, and they'll be complaining of an immediate onset of pain following this trauma, plus or minus some obvious deformity in the wrist.
So you mentioned fall and outstretched hands, like the classic cause.
That for elderly patients,
In terms of like trauma, are there any classic causes?
Younger patients? Yeah, so when I mean fall out and outstretched hand, they're both via that mechanism, but elderly patients is just from your standing height where they just have a fall. It's like a typical fall. And then, so young people, it's through like, you know, e-scooters or like, no, I'm not joking.
Yeah.
E-scooters.
Just dumb shit.
Dumb rubbish. Yeah, like trying to be Spider-Man. I don't know.
Yeah, I've actually done it twice to the same arm and I can confirm dumb mechanisms.
I had a friend in high school where like he was being carried and kind of helicoptered around. There's one of his other friends was being helicoptered around. Like on their shoulders, and then they collided, and he broke his head.
Like, imagine who let him cook, man? Who let him cook? So, you know, then they might have some swelling. They might also have some weakness or complain of some pins and needles. So that's that neurovascular assessment. So on history, there are some sort of red flags, things we want to ask about in the history. Does anyone have any idea about that? I want to have a stab in the dark about some things we want to ask.
Numbness.
Yep.
Like especially down in the thumb and index finger. Yeah.
Just neurovascular signs, right?
Yeah,
that
sure.
You described just now.
What about in like any traumatic event you want to rule out?
Did he hit your head?
Perfect. Or is there loss of consciousness? Because you want to make sure that typically if this is a traumatic event, you don't really want to worry about the distal radius of fracture if they've, you know, hit their head or they've lost consciousness. So that lets you sort of stratify the patients in terms of their risk. You do your Socrates pain history, as we all know. And then one thing that a lot of people miss is that if it's an elderly person with a fall, you want to do a good falls history. So don't just go into history about the fracture, ask about the fall. So, you know, did they have any symptoms leading up to the fall? What happened, you know?
Classic pre-fall, fall and post-fall.
Perfect, history. Yeah.
Good point.
What's another really important question you should ask if someone comes in with a complaining of a wrist pain and swelling and you suspect it's a fracture?
Oh, something to do with compartment syndrome? Or?
Oh, yeah, we'll get to that. Just something that's good to know that you probably should include in your referral or presentation to the orthopedics team.
Which hand they use?
Yes, perfect. Bingo. Yeah, so you want to know what their dominant hand is because that just affects their functionality as a whole. So if their job relies on that wrist or that hand, then there's going to be a completely different approach to someone that's just injured their non-dominant hand.
No, man, don't worry if it's non-dominant.
Yeah, man. Yeah, come on. And then, of course, you do your history. So, you know, past medical history, et cetera. And if it's an elderly patient, you want to know, you know, are you on blood thinners? Has this happened in the past? So on exam, how do we approach a musculoskeletal exam in general?
Look, feel, move.
Special test. Yeah, special test, great. Yeah. Well, I mean, in this case, there's no special test, so you're right. So what are you looking for when you're first inspecting the wrist?
Swelling.
Perfect.
Asymmetry in terms of comparing to the other wrist.
Yeah. What's something that, again, really important?
Well, is it open, like any
great. Yes. Yeah. Awesome. And is there any visible ecchymosis, visible deformity, that sort of thing? But the biggest one is open or closed because that will drastically alter management, right? Then you're going to do your feel. So it's reasonable to feel for tenderness, but just be very gentle. These people are going to be in a lot of pain, as you probably know, Mark. Like, you're not just going to go around, but, oh, I'm now palpating your wrist. Like, the person's going to jump. And so just, you know, just get an idea where the pain's localized to. And typically the pain's more in the radio ulnar joint area. And always finish your ortho exams by looking at the joint above. So look at their elbow and then also look at their, you know, MCP joints. So pretty straightforward, as I've been talking about. And differentials, I mean, really nothing. I mean, if someone comes in with that, you're pretty certain it's going to wrist fracture.
Do you have to be wary of like a scaphoid?
Yeah, fracture? Perfect. Yeah, so that's the biggest one. So palpate, anatomical snuff box. And of course, they're going to, the whole joint's going to be tender. It's whether that's the most tender out of everywhere, you know. Yeah. So be careful when you palpate, but you're just trying to get an idea where the most painful part is. Other things could be, it could be a metacarpal/carpal fracture and it could just simply be an ulnar fracture as well. But again, as I said, based on the probabilities, radial fracture is probably the most common. Yeah. There are three associated injuries with a distal radial fracture. There's a specific one called the ulnar styloid pull-off, where the ulnar styloid process also breaks off as well. Scaphoid fractures and medium nerve compression. Mm. So that's where they might get that paresthesia, numbness, weakness.
What did you say these were? These were
associated injuries with a distal radial fracture.
On top of the radius.
Yes,
fracture.
Correct.
So
yeah.
But you won't necessarily have them all the time.
No. Yep, no. Okay. Yeah. Right. Yep. So we all know that distal radial fractures have a variety of eponyms. So you've got like collies, Smith's. And has anyone heard of the chauffeur's fracture?
Yes.
Yes? Yeah, cool. So for JT's sake, I've written down where these names have come from.
Thanks, Nick.
No, it's all good, man.
I love to hear it.
Take a guess about where they're from.
John Smith, American.
Why are you shouting, man?
John Smith. What the fuck, bro? Adam Smith.
His name's Robert Smith. Robert. You weren't actually that Robert far. I mean, he wrote it in a book in 1847 about certain forms of accidents and congenital dislocations.
Hmm.
There you go. What about collies?
What kind of last name is Collies? Is it Scottish?
His name's Abraham Collies.
Wow.
Sounds American. I feel like Abraham's American.
Abe.
Abe.
Yeah, so he's from Ireland, Dublin, as Ireland. Pretty much every single name has come from so far in the early 1800s. And then a chauffeur's was described by someone from a country where, you know, not a real like common one for medicine.
No, chauffeur's not a name, right?
Is it? No. It was described by an...
No, it's because a chauffeur's would get this fracture because the engines back in the day, you'd have to wind it up like manually with your hand. You can't see this.
Yeah.
Wind it with your hand.
No, nailed
it. Circular motion. And then if you let go, the thing would like swing back and it hit you on the on your ulna.
Yes,
bone.
Yeah.
That's how people used nailed to it. Chauffeur's fracture.
So it's an ulna fracture.
It's a radial styloid fracture. So the little styloid process, which you can't really feel on your wrist. Well, actually, you can a little bit. That just gets chipped off.
So the radial
styloid. Yeah. Yep.
That's a cool story.
JT, I knew you were a fan of it from last week, so I was like, I'm gonna bring that through. All right, so this is actually the hardest question. What investigation are you gonna do for this patient that's coming with a distal radial fracture? Well, you suspect because you can't diagnose it without this investigation.
What, 2 views of x-ray?
2 views of what?
An x-ray.
Oh, x-ray, perfect answer. Yeah. Bing, bing, bing.
Orthopedic's best friend, hey?
It's the, you're right. You're talking about the rules of two, right?
Yeah.
Have you heard of those? When you finish interpreting an x-ray in an orthopedics case, you want to mention the rule of twos.
You mainly mentioned one of them.
Yep.
What was it?
So two views.
Which ones? Mm-hmm.
Lateral and...
That's cool.
So you want an x-ray of the joint above and
perfect
below.
That's the other two
and before and after.
Yep. Perfect, nailed it. So you want to get an x-ray before the cast and after the cast to make sure it's been reduced properly. Yep. So when you do the x-ray, that's when you can make the diagnosis of a distal radial fracture. Up until then, it's just clinical suspicion. And so you basically diagnose it by looking at radial height. Has it been shortened or impacted? Radial inclination and radial volar tilt. Now, these terms
these are big terms.
Wow. We're not going to look into these.
Good.
And that's just basically the technical terms orthopedics use in determining whether to do a surgical approach or non-operative approach.
For the common man.
For us plebs. Yeah.
For the common person. Okay. What would be like the different types of fractures you would like to be able to describe?
There's about six of them. I think there's six.
Okay, Marley, give us one.
Comminuted.
Yeah, perfect.
So, what?
That's just shattered.
Shattered, right?
Yeah. Multiple fragments.
Yeah. I like spiral. Spiral's a cool one.
Yeah, right.
Oblique,
yep.
Similar to spiral, but not really.
Yep. Similar, but oblique.
Yeah, so we've got three there. We'll go back to you, Marley. Any last three?
Green stick.
Yep.
Sorry, I'm not doing the obvious ones.
No, that's good. That's good.
A little peedsy one.
Kids.
Yes.
The classic one, transverse.
Transverse. And then last one.
Impact.
Yes. Great. Impacted. Yep. Yeah, great.
Which means like squished.
Shortened,
together, right?
Pretty much. Shortened. So when you're describing your fracture, those are some terms to use. And remember, fractures can be a few of them combined, you know.
Yeah.
You can get a transverse comminuted. They're not just going to exist by themselves. All right. We said we're going to do an x-ray.
Mm.
Now, do you think there's a place for CT MRIs in any of these cases?
Yes.
Sort of a leading question. Yeah, there is. What do you think we would use a CT MRI for? When do you think it would be indicated?
So like x-rays can't pick up nerves and blood vessels too well, right?
All right. Yep.
So if you suspect neurovascular injury, you'd want to do a CT and or MRI.
Sure. Yeah. So if you suspect it's a complex distal radial fracture, like you suspect that there's an element of, you know, nerve compression or it might have, you know, nipped an artery, like radial artery, then MRI CT is indicated, but they'll get one anyway because the surgeons will want it for their surgical planning. Then you want to take some pre-op bloods. Does anyone know what your pre-op bloods are?
FBCUECLFTs, WAGs, cross match, grip and hold.
Yep, perfect. So cross match would be probably reserved BBG. For those major traumas.
Lovely. Okay.
But grip and hold certainly, and you definitely do coags. So for our management, as for any trauma case, you want to resuscitate and stabilize the patient. That's your priority.
Mm-hmm.
And once stabilized, you want all displaced fractures to be reduced. So this leads to our sort of third principle, which is management is non-operative or operative. It can either be a closed reduction or open reduction. So closed reduction means you can do it simply in the E department, like you just do it on the bedside, sedate the patient, give their arm a yank.
So there's no surgery essentially.
Yeah. And then open reduction is pretty explanatory. The joint gets opened up and gets reduced in the operating theatre.
I know it sounds stupid. What do you mean by reduced?
So, yeah. So this is the other thing I wanted to talk about, which is that when you reduce a fracture, you want to aim for what we call an acceptable reduction. So a lot of people are like, oh, I'd anatomically reduce, which it's quite hard to do. You can't anatomically get the bone back into the position it was before. Mm-hmm. And so the principle is acceptable reduction. So is the bone reduced in a way that it's, you know, within the margins of what a normal wrist would look like? And do you have to make the call as an intern on that? No. The orthopedic surgeon will tell you whether it's a good enough reduction or not. So don't stress about that. So we've stabilized any trauma patient, you know, we've resuscitated them. And basically we have to decide whether it's operative or non-operative, and you don't make that call. The orthopedic surgeon does. Now, if the orthopedic surgeon says to you, all right, this patient doesn't need to come into theater, I want you to sort this patient out. How would you go about doing this? So what do you think you would need to get this patient out the door and feeling better? It's quite vague and open, I understand.
Like analgesia?
Yes, perfect. Yeah, great. So at this stage, you've just taken a history, you've examined them, you've sent them for an x-ray, and you're still not giving them analgesia. The patient's probably not too happy with you. So analgesia. What analgesia would you guys use?
Depends how much pain they're in.
Yep. That's a great idea.
An opioid might be warranted.
Yeah,
though.
I think so too.
Some fentanyl or something.
Yeah. So fentanyl is quite a short-acting, high-potency opioid medication.
Yeah.
So maybe you could give them that first if you think it will be quick.
Yep.
Or you can give them buprenorphine.
Could you do like a more local block or something? Like local anesthesia?
I'd call anesthetics and see what they want. You know, you call them up. I've got this patient with a distal radial fracture.
Yeah.
What do you think? Do you think they sedate or nerve block? So the first thing you need to do with any patient that's just had a fracture is reassure them and educate them about what's going to happen, right?
Patient Come on, man. Look at this.
This is the empathetic side of surgery. So, look, they deserve an adequate explanation. And
no one else, just only patients.
And appropriate advice and answers to their questions, because, look, this might be the first time they're going through it and, you know, they might be very nervous. The best thing is to then get consent. So do they consent to you reducing their fracture? So we're going to reduce the fracture, and there's 5 steps to reducing a fracture. The first one is explain to the patient as you go along what you're doing so they feel in the loop. So don't just like ignore them and just yank their wrist and, you know, reduce it. Just be like, okay, now I'm going to be applying some traction. So you hold their arm out, palm facing down, and you want to exaggerate the displacement, right? So what that means is you want to flex the hand because you want to worsen the injury,
right?
For collies, yeah. So first make it worse, okay? And then by doing this, you're disimpacting the fracture. So if the fracture was like this, right, short and impacted, right, if you try and pull, you're just going to damage the periosteum. And so what you need to do, you basically extend it and then pull when it comes out like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you make the angle bigger.
Yes. So then that lets you apply traction.
And then traction is just when you're like separating them.
Yes.
Like trying to.
It's always good to get a third person involved to hold their arm in place. So then when you're applying traction, you don't just pull their shoulder. So first make it worse, apply longitudinal traction, and then you get an assistant to apply counter traction to hold their arm in place. Then you reduce, which is the palm flexion. And then you also want to apply some slight ulnar deviation. So eventually their hand will be palm flexed about 10, 20 degrees. With a slight ulnar deviation. So it's a bit hard to describe.
Check the notion.
And then you want to immobilize. So you put them in a plaster, and your plaster should go from 4 finger breadths below the elbow, and it should go all the way up to the MCPJs. So your knuckles, yep. Mm. And make sure you don't go up to the fingers because you want to make sure you reserve that finger flexion and movement. So we'll go back to management. So management, you've got operative and non-operative, right?
Yeah.
And you're not going to make the call whether it's going to be either or. The reg will tell you. Mm. And if it's operative, cool, you just have to go down the line of your pre-op patient. But if it's the non-operative management, you're going to go down your close reduction and immobilization. And then they need a repeat x-ray. Mm. So in 5 to 10 days, something called the triple T's, trim, tidy and tighten, because you've obviously just done it in the ED, they might need to come back and get a proper one.
Do you do an x-ray immediately after you put the initial plaster and then as well?
In 7 days, five to seven days, because it might have, you always just want to make sure, because those early days are crucial to bone healing, right? Mm. And then you do something called trim, tidy, tighten. Yes. So you just basically tidy up the cast.
Mm.
Cool. And then you've got surgical. So that's an orifice and open reduction internal fixation. Mm. And it's basically indicated when the x-ray shows the fracture is unstable.
Mm-hmm. And usually internal fixation means like they've just put drills.
Screws.
Or screws plates. Yep.
Because you can also have external fixation.
You can have external fixation. Exactly.
That's for something.
And that's for open fractures and highly comminuted fractures.
Mm.
Yep. Oh, shit. That's one thing I forgot in management. If it's an open fracture, you need to give them
antibiotics
and a tetanus shot.
Yeah.
Yes.
Always tetanus.
Don't try and reduce an open fracture.
Mm.
Just cover it, dress it. And I think the whole point of an open fracture is don't let them get an infection. Yeah. So what are some complications you can get from just any fracture?
The healing issues?
Yes. So what are they called?
The union issues?
Yeah. So
malunion.
Malunion and you've got non-union. So what's the difference? Delete. So what are the difference between these?
Malunion is poorly unionized.
It's come together, but it's munted.
Yeah.
Poor.
It's
poor realignment. Perfect. Well,
the common people to just say, and non-union is just,
it hasn't healed. So that means you look at it in like 4 weeks and it shows no signs of healing.
Other complications.
Think about what's in the area.
To the neurovascular issues.
Yeah, you're on there. You're getting there. Yep.
Carpal tunnel.
Perfect. Yeah.
Median nerve stuff.
Yeah. If your mobilization technique was poor, they might get carpal tunnel, or it might just be a complication of the healing process, depending on how bad the fracture was. So in summary, there's complications with distal radial fractures, and that's it. Like with any fracture, you can get union deformity, whether that be a malunion, which is misalignment, or non-union, where it hasn't healed at all. You can get carpal tunnel syndrome, and it predisposes you to osteoarthritis.
And you always want to just look out for like compartment syndrome.
Always, right? Perfectly, great. So if someone represents with a cast with new onset symptoms, then you're thinking compartment. All right, so look, let's go over the three key takeaways. So what was the first one I mentioned? The first one is really big one. We mentioned
neurovascular.
So always assess neurovascular
status.
That's
like a pass-fail criteria in a lot of OSCEs.
I think you get a slap in the ED if you don't talk about it.
Slap. Nice. You'll physically get slapped.
No, that won't happen.
And
that's both in the workup of the patient and while you're managing them.
Yeah. Right?
Because sure, they might be fine while they're in the ED, but over time they might develop it.
Mm.
Okay. The other thing is tunnel vision. So don't become obsessed with the fracture. Look at what led to the fracture. If it's a trauma setting, you want to focus on that and address anything that's acutely going to affect the patient. Mm. Last one is management. So non-operative and operative.
Mm.
And you're mainly, as a junior doctor, going to be involved in – you're going to be involved in both, but you're more actively going to be involved in the non-operative setting, which involves close reductions, so an acceptable reduction, and immobilization. All right, so that's distal radial fractures. Thank you for listening along and discovering the amazing world of orthopedics. I'd like to thank JT, Jason, and Amalia for joining me and breaking down this very complex issue. And we look forward to talking again next week about the next amazing orthopedic topic.
Thank you so much for coming on, Nick. We'd love to have you.
No worries.
And for all those listeners out there, like Imali, thank you. If you want to come on, just message us. We'd love to have you. We'll
I
do
didn't
a few
message
more episodes.
Them. They messaged me.
You asked. No, you asked.
Jason just can't take a hint, but.
Yeah. So, I just hate talking about it, to be honest.
Yeah. Interact with us on Spotify. Ask us any questions. And we'll see you next time. Thank you. Bye.
It's come together, but it's fun.